Well, good afternoon, brethren. Well, it's good to see so many of you here. The place looks packed, pretty much. And after that food, I feel packed this morning. You'll notice that Mr. Tower and I, we conferred with each other on our messages, and whereas we had completely different SPSs, I think you'll see them. I'll give you an analogy that they're like two ships next to each other. We both know where each other's going, and you'll see them going to the same place, but as we leave port, they will come together, then take a different tact, come back together again, and you'll see that, I think, through our two messages. So let me ask you a question. How'd your Days of Unleavened Bread progress this week? Good? Or as I call it, the Days of Eating Cardboard. How many of you know what Manischewitz is? How many of you get Manischewitz cardboard? No, it's pretty good, right? I enjoy it. I really do. I make fun of it, but we have a couple of favorites of matzahs in our house, and I think it's a fascinating time of year. It really is, and we can make jokes about it, but there's quite a few ways you can prepare unleavened bread, and you saw that with the food that was offered this morning by so many different people, and we are so very, very important. So a week ago, you were cleaning out the cupboards, weren't you? You're cleaning the car probably for the first time in months, right? You found stuff that you'd eaten and fallen under the seat. Wow, did you? I found it. We did carpets, cushions. Well, Becky did most of that. She has a new vacuum. It's just one of those super HEPA with the sucking shark or whatever they call it, or it's a shark sucker or something. I don't know. She called me from upstairs halfway through her cleaning. She said, honey, I found the pizza that you left in the carpet. I could do this, right? So I asked if I could help. She said, yes, you can take the toaster. I've been given the toaster, brethren, for 38 years. I'm handed a toothbrush and a toaster and told to get out of the house. I had used my boys when they were younger. They would have helped, but they're grown. So now it's just me. The toaster and a toothbrush. But I learned a new way to clean a toaster for the Days of Unleavened Bread from, and I don't think she's here today, she's recuperating health-wise, is Norma Kelly. Do you know what the Norma Kelly method for cleaning a toaster is? Throw it away and buy a new one. No, that's cagey, though. That's cagey. That's the cheesy way out. No, she goes out into her little patio with a high-pressured hose and hoses it off. You're not laughing. It works. I tried it. It works. Just be really careful that it's dried when you plug it back in. Make sure that somebody else is around it, not you. So, let me tell you just very briefly one more story, and I don't mean to tell. Is this rug new? Is this new up here, John, for us? It is new. Does it fly? It gets very noisy up here, so I think this is a good addition. Let me tell you very quickly about my spiritual journey this particular Days of Unleavened Bread. On Tuesday, I have to conduct occasional seminars for a small group, and lunch was brought in, and I asked if I could get it and pay for it. So I went to the deli shop, and I ordered the various chicken salads, teriyaki salads, turkey salads, turkey and teriyaki chicken salads. They asked if I wanted croutons, and I said, it's their salad, but it's Days of Unleavened Bread. Nah, forget it. We won't do that. Then they asked me, what would you like? I said, I'd like a turkey sandwich, lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise. What kind of bread? And I said, oh, honey oat. I love the honey oat. She said, coming right up. Foot long? I said, make it a foot long. And so I ate it, saved half of it for later. As I came into the house at the end, I'd finished the sandwich, walked in the door. Becky said, are you hungry? I said, no, I'm kind of full. And as I turned the corner, there she was sitting on the couch, her Bible in one hand, matzahs in the other hand, a good news on her lap, and this aura like a halo around her head. She said, what did you eat? I said, uh-oh. I blew it. All that work, all that planning, uh-oh, she said, you are defiled. Please leave the house. Now, I've embellished that a little bit, but not a whole lot. It just seems, as much as I try, I don't know, because a lot of us have jobs in the world, I just blew it, and there's no excuse for it. Did I feel bad? I did feel bad. I felt horrible. I felt very, very horrible. I'm not going to go into it now. I'll start to cry, but but we, when it comes to these days, are often, or try to be, as scrupulous as our Jewish, Judaic neighbors. Years ago, a member of the church, in fact, now I study Judaism for its historical and religious sense, not for its observational sense. I want to be very clear about that. They have a tradition, and someone gave me this. Anybody, how many of you know what this is? Some of you that grew up in a Jew, oy vey, those of you that grew up in a Jewish household don't even have your hands up. Oy, 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 oy. This is a very important kit. Oh, a couple of you, Mr. Velasquez, I didn't know you grew up in a Jewish home. And this is known as Birchat Chametz. And what this is the search for the leavened bread. Now, what it has inside, you'll find this very interesting, it has a spoon. And I've showed this, I think, years and years ago, and it's getting kind of ratty. But I think it's very interesting. There is a candle, and there is a feather. A ladle or a spoon, a candle, and a feather. And it has a bag. It's important, and it has two prayers that they say. And how this works is, they work especially with children. The custom is that they will scatter 10 pieces of bread, leavened bread, throughout the house prior to Passover. And the adult will go with the child, or the adult can go on their own, and they will hunt with the candle lit, and the spoon and the feather there as they go and find and scoop up with the feather into the ladle, spoon, and put it into the bag throughout the house. It's a very, very important ceremony. It's part of their tradition. I don't make light of it at all. They make a prayer, which I won't try and read in Hebrew, though it would be very familiar to a lot of you. It begins with Baruch Atah Adonai, or Baruch Atah Yahweh. It basically says to say to God, thank you that he has commanded us to remove leaven from our homes. And it's from Exodus chapter 12, which you'll look at. So the candle, the spoon, and the feather, they hunt for the leaven. And then there's other fascinating rules and traditions which won't go into. And again, they're fascinating, and they have evolved over the centuries for this day and this time. But today what I'd like to do is discuss with you the bread and the leaven, its biblical, historical, and even its chemical nature, because that is really, really very important. But in the end, it's not about the bread. And that's the title of my message. So let's discuss, if we could, the clear command in Exodus chapter 12, if you'll turn there, please. This is a very important set of scriptures. It's foundational to when the calendar begins, how it begins, the beginning of the year. And every year, we start in the spring because of what we read here in Exodus chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Now, the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt. They're still in Egypt. This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. And that's what we find ourselves today. This is the first month of the sacred year. It begins in the spring, and it begins 14 days into it through Passover. And so we drop down to verse 14. It talks about the Passover itself and the day of unleavened bread. So verse 14, it says, so this day, the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, shall be to you a memorial. And you shall keep it as a feast to the eternal throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. We know it's to last forever. And that's one of the reasons we keep it today. Because it has great historical and biblical significance. It then goes on in verse 15 where really it says it all. It says it all, and I want you to listen to the key words that are repeated. Verse 15, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh, that person shall be cut off from Israel. Leaven is mentioned many, many times. But it's not the same word. It's three different words where we read the same word leaven in the English. In the first part, 15a, we would call it, it says to eat unleavened bread. That is the word chamatzot, which means where we get our word matzah. It's where we get matzah bread from. So that's chamatzot. Verse 15b says to remove leaven. That is the word seor, which actually means the leaven itself, the ingredient we would call leaven, actual leaven. And then later it says leavened bread, which means bread that has been leavened with yeast. And that is known as chametz. And that's bad. Leaven's bad and chametz is bad. If you take bread and leaven, you put it together, you get leavened bread. But they're all three different words and they're very important. I don't want to give you a lot of statistics, but I think it's critical to understanding why this single chapter, and in fact this one verse, is so critical. Matzah is used, the word itself, principally 30 times. Of those 30 times, 4 times are in Exodus 12 alone, 11 times in Exodus, and only 6 times outside the law. So the vast majority of the usages of the word matzah are within these books. The word seor is used only 5 times, all 3 books, 3 times in Exodus, 2 other times in the law. Chametz is used principally 10 times, all in Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. What's my point? These terms are associated overwhelmingly. We may think it's obvious, but biblically it is not so obvious. They are used principally, predominantly, overwhelmingly with Passover in these days. They only make sense within these days. Verse 16 continues. It says, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation. On the seventh day, today, there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. Verse 17, so you shall observe the feast, and the word feast there is added. You shall observe unleavened bread, matzah. This is the time of matzah. So we get the point. We get it. God doesn't like leaven at this time of year. We get it. It's repeated over and over again. But it gets worse for the observer if they do certain things. He says, for on the same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt, therefore you shall observe this day. There's the reason, is the leaving of Egypt. You shall observe it throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the evening first day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your home, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off. That is the word kareth. That is probably one of the stiffest and most pronounced judgments in the entire Old Testament. It means to be cut down. You will be cut off if you eat leaven from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native of the land. It does not matter. Jew or Gentile, you shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings shall you eat unleavened bread. We got it. We got it. No leaven. So in many ways, this should be called the feast of something missing. Leaven. God doesn't want it around. He wants it gone for a week. We remove it as we enter this particular week, which we are now completing. What's the best way to remove leaven from you? Move. Go find another place. Go live in a motel. Get out of Dodge. That's the best way, because your dwelling, you can change it. In fact, that's what the Israelites did. They didn't get abyssal and vacuum their house. They left Egypt. So they left leaven behind. And that shows another very powerful aspect, which I think you're going to be spoken to about that a little later. We de-leaven our homes, we de-leaven our cars, we de-leaven whatever we feel necessary, where we are. I don't de-leaven your house or your car, you don't de-leaven mine. Each of us have our respective areas, our sphere, that we are to remove all leaven. Why no leaven? If you were to have a conversation with leaven, leaven would say, what did I do? I didn't do anything. You use me all the time, but for 1 week you don't like me. Why? What's the point? It doesn't seem any more logical than to remind Israel that they left Egypt. But within leaven, there is a deeply hidden power. It's chemical. Is leaven sin? You will search, and I've asked a number of people in my family, I want you to search the Old Testament where there's an equal sign between the word leaven and the word sin. Let me save you some time. You're not going to find it. It isn't there. Leaven does not equal sin in the Old Testament, not directly, not in any way, shape, or form. And so, because of this hidden power, it does something. It's chemistry, something I remember from long, long ago. Leaven or a leavening agent is something, typically yeast, but not always, that acts in a fermentation process predominantly. It's not always yeast. There are other compounds. There's some sulfate, pyrophosphate compounds. They're very complex, but they do basically the same thing. But yeast is different. It's biological. It is a type of fungus. It is a living organism. It has a very interesting component. It's known as an enzyme or a catalase. Catalase sounds just exactly like what it does. It is a catalyst. A catalyst is an entity that accelerates a reaction but is not consumed and doesn't really participate in it. When something is a catalyst for something else, it's not really touched. It participates only distantly. When we ferment sugar, we produce two important compounds. But the last thing I want to do, as fascinating as it may be to, I think, about six people in this room who I know, we would find this very fascinating. It produces ethanol and CO2, carbon dioxide. In bread, CO2 causes the bread to rise. It's where we get the puffy, and sometimes you'll see holes in the bread. That is what from the CO2. And the ethanol, because it's compositionally very low, or it's a very small percentage of is ethanol, it's basically burned away in the process. So yeast is not really what we want. The leaven is not really what we want. It's its enzymes, the catalase, the catalyst inside of it. It's not what it is. It's what it does. It's not leaven's fault. It's what's inside leaven. Without it, there is no bread, not as we know it. There's also not something else that we have. What is that? Beer. Alcohol. There's brewer's yeast and baker's yeast, and they do different things. So it is with leaven. It's not the leaven itself. It's what the leaven does. It does things. It causes things to happen, and you don't need a whole lot of it. I think that's what's the most amazing thing. You don't need much yeast or leaven to do so much work. Just a bit, a small amount. Now, as we move to the New Testament, leaven, chemically, biologically, really hadn't changed a whole lot. Leaven still chemically reacted as it had for thousands and thousands of years. Leaven was still being removed from homes as Passover occurred. However, it took on new and added dimensions and definitions. Turn with me, if you would, to the New Testament, Matthew 15. And we're going to spend most of our time, if not all of it, and as Eagle Rock knows, I could spend all day in Matthew. It is a fascinating book. The Gospels, the other Gospels, Synoptic Gospels, talk about, obviously, many, many of the same stories, concepts, and ideas. Some are longer than others. I prefer Matthew because it does have a longer explanation in most cases. In Matthew 15, here's a series of verses that concerns these days. Many believe they were spoken in anticipation or running up to the days that we observe today. It says in chapter 15, verse 1, "Then the scribes and Pharisees who were from Jerusalem came to Jesus saying, 'Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread.'" Now, in those days, in first century Judaism, you could wash your hands two different ways, right? You could wash them with water, like you and I would do, or you could wash them the way the Pharisees did. And the Pharisees, and to a degree the Sadducees, the scribes, they had a certain amount of water in a certain amount of manner, done in a certain prescribed process. And it's all right here in this book. And I could, for the next 2 hours, read you the prescription for washing your hands ceremonially so that you are not defiled and the bread is not defiled that you eat. Jesus answered verse 3 and said, Why do you also transgress the commandment of God? Because of your tradition. For God commanded, honor your father and mother, and he who curses father and mother, let him be put to death. But you say, whosoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received is a gift to God. They called it Korban on that day. They dedicated it to the temple. Then we need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition. Hypocrites, since in the emphatic. Well did Isaiah prophesy, and he reads the prophecy of Isaiah, where you honor me with your lips, but you don't obey me. He said, verse 10, when he had called the multitude to himself, he said to them, hear and understand, not that what goes into the mouth defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. And we get here the first inkling of chapter 15 and verse 6, chapter 16, because it is predominantly about bread. It ends the chapter, verse 32, with a very famous story. Now Jesus, verse 32, Matthew 15, now Jesus called his disciples to himself and said, I have compassion on the multitude because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. Can you imagine? Just picture that. Following somebody around for 3 days. 3 days. We have trouble following somebody for 30 minutes. They were with him for 3 days. And they had nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry lest they faint on the way. His disciples said to him, where could we get enough bread in the wilderness to fill such a great multitude? How many loaves do you have? And they said, seven, a few fish. He commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the seven loaves and fishes, gave thanks, broke them, gave them to his disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitude. So they all ate, were filled. They took up seven large baskets full of the fragments that were left. Now those who ate were 4,000 men, besides women and children. And he sent away the multitude, got into the boat, and came to the region of Magdala. It's a beautiful story. So the chapter begins with bread. It ends with bread. In chapter 16, we learn it's not about bread. Then the Pharisees and Sadducees came, and testing him, asked him that he would show them a sign from heaven. He answered and said to them, when it is evening, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites! Sound familiar? You know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and no sign shall be given to it, except the sign of the prophet Jonah. Now that's interesting. He gives only one sign, and it is the sign of Jonah. He didn't need to explain it, because all knew what the sign of Jonah was. How do we know they knew? You know what it is. It's 3 days and three nights. 3 days and three nights in the belly of the whale, so should the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth. And so in essence, they were doubting who he was. Show us a sign. Prove who you are. Prove who you are and what you do. He said, I'll give only one, the sign of Jonah. And then he makes a statement, verse 5. Now when his disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said to them, take heed and beware the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Verse 7, always quick on the uptake, the disciples, they reasoned among themselves, saying, it's because we have no bread. Now we chuckle at that. It's because we read the whole story. We know what occurred. It is because we have taken no bread. No. Is it about bread? No. It's not about bread. Verse 8, but Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand and remember the five loaves of the 5,000? Or how many baskets you took up? Or the seven loaves of the 4,000, how many baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread? It isn't about bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. It's not about bread. It's about leaven. But it's not even about leaven. It just isn't. He gives these analogies for a deeper reason. As we heard, Mr. Tower, I counted at least three times, Mr. Tower said, a physical example for a spiritual lesson. We do physical things to learn spiritually. Rarely do we do spiritual things to learn physically. But God gives us things to do, actions to take, so that we will learn. It isn't about bread. Luke calls what the Pharisees and Sadducees did hypocrisy. Mark never even explains it in his gospel. But it wasn't about bread. It wasn't about leaven. It was about an attitude of people. Paul calls it in the book of Corinthians. We know it well. I guarantee you would have heard it during this Feast of Unleavened Bread if you didn't read it on your own. Paul says it is about the sincerity and truth, the lack of it. He talks about malice and wickedness, the presence of it. It's not bread. It's not leaven. It's what the leaven does. It's what the leaven does. And although the Pharisees and Sadducees meant well, they did not do well. They did not tell well. And again, it's not bread. And it's not about leaven. It is indeed, in reality, it's about us. It's about our inability, your inability and my inability. Leaven is the catalyst that brings these things in full flower. It puffs up. Just like bread, we puff up. Paul uses those terms, a puffing up. Like a loaf of bread, we rise in importance. We rise in our own dignity and our own self-significance. It's easy to do. I do it. I find myself doing it, and it's troubling. It is in us. It causes an attitude of untruth, of self-importance, and of doubting. It also often causes the subjection of other people in fear. When people are important, they think they're important, you put other people down. Easy to do, seems almost natural, like falling off a log. Many ways we can make an art form out of it, and we are powerless to stop it. We do criticizing and fault-finding. So, unless it is removed, the catalyst of leaven remains to cause sin. It just kind of helps it along, makes it happen. So when we remove leaven, and we remove the leaven, did we? We come full circle. We come full circle in that we have clearly cleaned out our homes, our cars, our toasters, haven't we? I did. I hit it with a hose. There wasn't nothing left. I hit it again. There was something still left. I hit it again. What is wrong with this thing? It's just hung on and hung on and hung on. And you know that's what happens. That's exactly what happens. Because it isn't about bread. It never was about bread. And it never was about leaven. God's trying to work with us, with you and with me. It was proven until we move out into something else, we will always have leaven around us. We can never be physically away from it. It's all around us. Oh, by the way, I don't think they de-leavened this hall. Shock. Shock. When you go into Wirtz Hall for the mid-meal, I will guarantee you they did not de-leaven that building. I know, shock. Shock. We are physically never away from it. The best we can do is where we live physically, but it has spiritual lessons. We keep these days for a physical reason to teach us deep spiritual values. One aspect is we cannot clean our dwellings any more than we can clean our lives. It is impossible. I understand the phrase, putting sin out of our life. Well, brethren, you may do a perfect job of it. I don't. There is no spiritual, as it were, vacuum cleaner. We need God and His Spirit. Maybe that's the vacuum cleaner. Maybe that's what we need. That's with Passover, which can never be divorced from the days of unleavened bread. They are bound together. In fact, the Jews, as you know, call Passover the full 8 days. The Passover to us is Jesus Christ's sacrifice in our stead, in our place. He alone can clean us. He alone can remove the sin. His Spirit alone allows us to remain humble. It is very difficult to be humble on your own. Look around. Look at politicians. Look at actors. Look at people. It's very, very difficult. His Spirit alone allows us to de-leaven ourselves spiritually. Recall the mention I said of a second prayer in Judaism for the search of the leaven, the Birchat Hametz. After they have searched, in Jewish homes, they know they have not found all the leaven. They know it, and I'll show you why. So they cover it with a prayer. I am not demeaning the prayer whatsoever. It is fascinating, though, to read. It says, all chametz, which is leavened bread, all chametz and leaven, and leavened bread that is in my possession, which I have not seen, removed, or is unknown to me, should be annulled and considered ownerless like the dust of the earth, unquote. It's not mine anymore. I'm going to ignore it. I've done all I can do. That's enough. These breadcrumbs, this leaven, they're not in my home. They are ownerless. They're there. I will ignore them. I'm done. Not my issue, because by my power, I have cleaned my home. It is a different perspective. We, however, would pray differently. We would pray that Jesus Christ has cleansed us from our sin, as pictured in the Passover, the wave sheaf offering, which happened just earlier this week in the days of unleavened bread. That the sin against God's law is ours, and we have repented of it, and God has forgiven of it. We have their prayer and their understanding from the standpoint of Israel and Egypt. But we have more. We know more. We are not better, but we are held more accountable because of what we know. To whom much is given, much is expected. To whom much knowledge is given, much practice is expected. Our duty is to make every effort to observe these days, to make every effort physically to clean as best we can. But we are also to have our understanding is that what we do will never, ever be complete. Never, ever be fulfilled. Not by our power and not by our hand. That Passover, the sacrifice, is not separated from the days of unleavened bread. It is that Jesus Christ has indeed purged us from all sins, as we heard. So let's conclude. Each year, the days of unleavened bread remind us it isn't about the bread. That isn't the point, as Jesus told the disciples. He said it's not about the bread and the leaven. It's about us. It's about the things that we do. It's the things that displease God. So as we clean our physical homes for a week, and not tonight as we would normally, but tomorrow night, we'll load up at Trader Joe's and Vaughn's and Stater Brothers as much bread as we possibly can, because now it's okay. Wasn't okay a week ago, now it's okay. But as we clean our physical homes, we know it is impossible. Just like our lives. As hard as we can try, and we should always try, it is about us. It is us that we and God need cleaned and de-leavened. Without Jesus Christ and His Spirit living in us, it is all the more impossible without that. And then again, maybe indeed, it is about bread, a certain type of bread. We call it the true bread from heaven.